short meditation, then you can pick the pointer, the portal that assists you the most in this moment. So you can surrender to the present moment, allow the present moment. You can go into your inner body and feel the aliveness of the energy, life force in your body. And of course you can bring your awareness to your breathing. Perhaps you can, this can be in combination with body awareness, or you can listen to the silence, even if there is noise. Can you perceive the silence around the noise, or the noise that is happening within the greater silence? Or you can simply be still and just note the stillness, the changing within the unchanging of the now. So just for a couple of minutes, we are going to just simply be. Thoughts may come, emotions may manifest. Just allow them to be. There's no effort, no forcefulness, just an openness to the present moment. again, there's been a slight gap longer than intended from the previous episode. But it seems to be the way it is. And we left off from the passage titled "All Structures Are Unstable." That is the last section we read. And we are still in chapter 3, I believe. This will be, we'll finish chapter 3 today. And for those following on the Oprah podcast recordings of The New Earth, where Oprah interviews Eckhart and they go over each chapter, then for those of you who want to can tune in to chapter 3 as well if it's not been seen already. So the title of this passage is "The Ego's Need to Feel Superior." There are many subtle but easily overlooked forms of ego that you may observe in other people and, more important, in yourself. Remember, the moment you become aware of the ego in yourself, that emerging awareness is who you are, beyond ego, the deeper I, the recognition of the false is already the arising of the real. For example, you are about to tell someone the news of what happened. Guess what? You don't know yet? Let me tell you. If you are alert enough, present enough, you may be able to detect a momentary sense of satisfaction within yourself just before imparting the news, even if it is bad news. It is due to the fact that for a brief moment, there is in the eyes of the ego an imbalance in your favor between you and the other person. For that brief moment, you know more than the other. The satisfaction that you feel is of the ego, and it is derived from feeling a stronger sense of self relative to the other person. Even if he or she is the president or the pope, you feel superior in that moment because you know more. Many people are addicted to gossiping partly for this reason. In addition, gossiping often carries an element of malicious criticism and judgment of others. And so it also strengthens the ego through the implied but imagined moral superiority that is there whenever you apply a negative judgment to anyone. If someone has more, knows more, or can do more than I, the ego feels threatened because the feeling of less diminishes its imagined sense of self relative to the other. It may then try to restore itself by somehow diminishing, criticizing, or belittling the value of the other person's possessions, knowledge, or abilities. Or the ego may shift its strategy, and instead of competing with the other person, it will enhance itself by association with that person if he or she is important in the eyes of others. The next passage is titled Ego and Fame. The well-known phenomenon of name-dropping, the casual mention of who you know, is part of the ego's strategy of gaining a superior identity in the eyes of others, and therefore in its own eyes through association with someone important. The bane of being famous in this world is that who you are becomes totally obscured by a collective mental image. Most people you meet want to enhance their identity, the mental image of who they are, through association with you. They themselves may not know that they are not interested in you at all, but only in strengthening their ultimately fictitious sense of self. They believe that through you they can be more. They are looking to complete themselves through you, or rather through the mental image they have of you as a famous person, a larger-than-life collective conceptual identity. The absurd overvaluation of fame is just one of the many manifestations of egoic madness in our world. Some famous people fall into the same error and identity with the collective fiction, the image people and the media have created of them, and they begin to actually see themselves as superior to ordinary mortals. As a result, they become more and more alienated from themselves and others, more and more unhappy, more and more dependent on their continuing popularity, surrounded only by people who feed their inflated self-image. They become incapable of genuine relationships. Albert Einstein, who was admired as almost superhuman, and whose fate it was to become one of the most famous people on the planet, never identified with the image the collective mind had created of him. He remained humble, egoless. In fact, he spoke of a grotesque contradiction between what people consider to be my achievements and abilities and the reality of who I am and what I am capable of. This is why it is hard for a famous person to be in a genuine relationship with others. A genuine relationship is one that is not dominated by the ego, with its image-making and self-seeking. In a genuine relationship, there is an outward flow of open, alert attention toward the other person, in which there is no wanting whatsoever. That alert attention is presence. It is the prerequisite for any authentic relationship. The ego always either wants something, or if it believes there is nothing to get from the other, it is in a state of utter indifference. It doesn't care about you. And so, the three predominant states of egoic relationships are wanting, thwarted wanting, anger, resentment, blaming, complaining, and indifference. So that's the end of chapter 3. And perhaps we can begin chapter 4 today as well. So the let's have a look at the chapter title. So the title of chapter 4 is called Role Playing, The Many Faces of the Ego. An ego that wants something from another, and what ego doesn't, will usually play some kind of role to get its needs met, be they material gain, a sense of power, superiority, or specialness, or some kind of gratification, be it physical or psychological. Usually, people are completely unaware of the roles they play. They are those roles. Some roles are subtle, others are blatantly obvious, except to the person playing it. Some roles are designed simply to get attention from others. The ego thrives on others' attention, which is after all a form of psychic energy. The ego doesn't know that the source of all energy is within you, so it seeks it outside. It is not the formless attention which is presence that the ego seeks, but attention in some form, such as recognition, praise, admiration, or just to be noticed in some way, to have its existence acknowledged. A shy person who is afraid of the attention of others is not free of ego, but has an ambivalent ego that both wants and fears attention from others. The fear is that the attention may take the form of disapproval or criticism, that is to say, something that diminishes the sense of self rather than enhances it. So the shy person's fear of attention is greater than his or her need of attention. Shyness often goes with a self-concept that is predominantly negative, the belief of being inadequate. Any conceptual sense of self, seeing myself as this or that, is ego, whether predominantly positive, I am the greatest, or negative, I am no good. Behind every positive self-concept is the hidden fear of not being good enough. Behind every negative self-concept is the hidden desire of being the greatest or better than others. Behind the confident ego's feeling of and continuing need for superiority is the unconscious fear of inferiority. Conversely, the shy, inadequate ego that feels inferior has a strong hidden desire for superiority. Many people fluctuate between feelings of inferiority and superiority, depending on situations, on the people they come into contact with. All you need to know and observe in yourself is this. Whenever you feel superior or inferior to anyone, that's the ego in you. And that's the end of the opening passage of chapter 4. So I'm just briefly going to highlight anything that stands out from the end of chapter 3. And towards the end, Eckhart talks about a genuine relationship. A genuine relationship is one that is not dominated by the ego with its image-making and self-seeking. In a genuine relationship, there is an outward flow of open, alert attention toward the other person, in which there is no wanting whatsoever. Now, after reading this, I could almost sense a reaction within me of any, you know, relationships in my life that perhaps there's a wanting there, and perhaps there's a sign of ego, perhaps wanting to seem good in the other person's eyes, or wanting them, perhaps wanting some sort of emotion from them, some connection. And sometimes this can seem paradoxical, because when spending time with people in your life, you are wanting to connect. But perhaps there is no expectations on this intention. There is no waiting for that to happen. There is the energy, perhaps, of connection to be present with that person, to want that relationship, whatever form it is, to grow. But perhaps there's a detachment to the outcome, which I'm sensing that's the difference of wanting to connect, but it's not to be in the egoic energy. It makes me think of just almost basking in the sunlight. You can enjoy it, appreciate it, but there's no wanting there. And perhaps this can be where you're basking in the essence of the other person. You are just simply experiencing the connection has already been formed, and there's just an enjoyment of that person's company. Something to perhaps reflect upon further. But that line struck me immediately after reading it. So perhaps if there's wanting in some of your friendships, relationships, then perhaps this can be reflected upon as well. Perhaps looking back of the source of the wanting, is it from the ego that wants to impress or wants to be superior, wants to prove their superiority, and not necessarily over that person? It may just be of just I'm such a good person, or I'm for them to see you in that way. And then we moved on to the role-playing of the ego, where the ego may take certain shapes to get what it wants. And Eckhart talks about two kind of modalities of the ego here, where if there is someone who's more reserved or shy, it doesn't mean that they are free of the ego. That perhaps there is an underlying need to want to be seen. But their fear of attention is greater than the need for attention. But with that comes the belief of inadequacy. Something about you is inadequate. And Eckhart says any sort of conceptual sense of self, whether you are saying, I am the greatest or I am no good, whether you're adequate or inadequate, that this is ego, this is the role of ego. And he details the specificness of, if you have a negative self-concept about yourself, then such as being inadequate, then there's a desire of wanting to be the greatest, wanting to be better than others. And behind the confident ego's feeling of continuing the need for superiority is the unconscious fear of inferiority. And it is said that people fluctuate between these inferior and superior feelings, the concepts, the labels about themselves, depending on situations or the people they come in contact with. And you can sense the instability of having these self-concepts, having these beliefs, where one moment, I think in The Power of Now, Eckhart talks about, loving yourself and then hating yourself, like a pendulum going back and forth. And by drilling into these concepts, there are the hidden fears or the egoic desires underlying that. And the last line sums up the passage there. All you need to know and observe in yourself is this: whenever you feel superior or inferior to anyone, that's the ego in you. So thank you for joining me for today's episode. I wish you well in this present moment, and we will talk again very soon. Take care.